Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Keenan Eckstein and his band are a vibrant rock and roll group from Cape Town, South Africa. With their energetic performances and compelling stage presence, they've been steadily making their mark both locally and in Europe. Since forming in 2021, the band has been carving out a space in the rock scene, crafting music that pays homage to legendary rock sounds while adding a contemporary edge. In just over 2 years, Keenan and the band have achieved impressive milestones, including 3 European tours. The first, a solo acoustic tour, introduced Keenan's talent to intimate audiences across iconic cities. The second, with the full band, saw them performing to increasingly larger audiences. Their most recent tour included a co-headlining performance alongside Grammy winners Arrested Development at Sommer & De Stutt. Keenan has also ventured into solo collaborations, performing with international EDM duo Goldfish. Over the years, he has also shared stages with some of South Africa's most celebrated artists, including Jeremy Loops, De Heuvels Fantasies, and Art Matthews. The band's discography includes the EP Forever, the album Golden Fever, and a series of singles, with 4 reaching number 1 positions on the radio charts. With a growing fan base and new music on the horizon, Keenan and his band are gearing up for an exciting future, ready to continue their journey in both South African and international rock scenes. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Keenan Eckstein. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Thank you very much, Barrett, for having me on. I am right now in Cape Town, in the heart of Blouberg. Oh, I think it's the heart of Blouberg. I don't know. It's by the beach.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this music world, and how did that journey progress?
It was always around. My parents were quite into music. My dad was in cover bands most of his early career, up until probably late 30s, early 40s. He still plays every now and then, you know, like the local pub or whatnot there out in the countryside where they stay. And my grandfather was also in church bands and playing guitar, and so there was always a heavy music influence, but never really much writing or passion in terms of I can make this into something career-wise until I reached about maybe 16, between 16 and 18. I decided I want to see if I can, you know, give this a go. Started posting some covers on YouTube, wrote one or two of my own songs. They were horrible, by the way. You know, leading me, their first few songs are very horrible. They're either horrible or they're a ripoff of your favorite songs at the time. That's what I learned. Eventually, after you've now played every melody that you know, you kind of like start making it your own and making it your own. You know, like how you know, the gene pool eventually waters down until you find something completely new and deformed. And then you can call it your own. So about 18, 20, between that time, I wrote my first few songs and sent it to Jeremy Farber, who is now my manager and producer, and he was interested, and then we recorded it. But to backtrack a bit more, my dad taught me how to play the guitar at 11, and I taught myself a couple of chords on the piano as a teen, but that's pretty much where it was. And then everything from there, self-taught, never had any vocal lessons. So only recently we started doing some vocal lessons just to maintain and improve what we can, get proper technique down. But other than that, I'm just a bedroom guitarist and bedroom artist up until we, you know, took off professionally.
You mentioned Jeremy Farber as your manager. Did you just send your stuff to him? Did you have a connection to him? Or did you, like I said, did you just email your stuff through and hope for the best? Or how did that connection happen?
So it's a funny story. He actually hit me with his car. That's a joke. I'm kidding. I used to send all my demos that I made back in the day to my dad because he was the only person that I knew that did music. So I would just send it to him and be like, hey, listen to this, you know, tell me if it's cool. What do you think? Just so that you don't have your own confirmation bias, if I'm not mistaken. You know, like you wrote this or you're proud of it, but you have to hear what other people say. And he knew a friend, a family friend or a friend through the music as well. And that friend, Sebrant, is his name. He's also an artist from South Africa, a very good Afrikaans artist. He was busy under Jim's label for Tomorrow Studios. And then my dad sent it to him, and a couple of years went by and he sent it to Jim, this one song called Be Free. sent it to Jeremy, and Jeremy was like, okay, that's pretty cool. You know, we can record it once we build our studio. And that took about 2 years. So only maybe end of 2021. All of this started at around 2019 or so, the talks of it. And maybe around 2021 or so, when they were finally done building his house and his studio, and then he said, okay, come around. And initially it was just supposed to be like a once-off song. You know, it was just supposed to be that song, and then here you go, here's your mixtape. You know, it was fun doing it. But me and Jeremy hit it off, and he asked me if there were any more tunes. And yeah, just the way that we worked together was quite nice. And me being, you know, very inexperienced, it was very cool to learn all this studio stuff from him. You know, he also had a decent amount of experience with making some albums and stuff. So yeah, and then it took off from there. And the first song that I ever wrote that we recorded, Be Free, became Sing With Me, which we did with Goldfish, because I didn't want it anymore. It was a little bit out of my style. So they completely remixed it and transformed it into something else. And then Dixie Clouds came. And that was the very first single we released as Keenan Extium. And the rest is history.
You referenced earlier about going for vocal training now and how that's helping you improve. In what ways is it helping you improve? And what aspect of it is actually surprising that you didn't realize that you may be doing something correctly or incorrectly that you have now figured out?
That's a cool question. I haven't been asked that before. So something that was really cool, well, cool and also eye-opening, is the fact that most of it comes from the diaphragm, you know, so you got to flex the core, comes from like way down here. And before that, I was relying a lot on the throat, and that's obviously a recipe for disaster, you know, screaming and doing a couple hours sets and whatnot. So I never knew that you don't have to be so intense on your throat. You can just, you know, move that energy or the force down. Diaphragm, keep the core. Yeah, that has saved me a lot. And I think if a lot of singers knew that very early on, it would save them a lot of damage that they do to the vocal cords as well. You know, a lot of artists these days, not even these days, but a lot of artists that I also know personally had to go for operations for vocal nodules and that kind of stuff. So it's a very scary reality when you're just abusing your voice, because, and even if you know these kinds of things, it's quite difficult to control, because if you're at one good show and the crowd is going and you know, you're in the moment and you want to, you know, in between songs that do like a high note, just, you know, feel like you're Bruce Springsteen or something, can get away from you. So you have to stay very aware and mindful of protecting the voice regardless. So that was one cool thing that I learned. Yeah, and also, just a few little cool stage tricks to, you know, mic control and that kind of stuff. Nothing wow, but that was a cool eye-opening little thing that I stumbled upon.
Because you had been singing for so long in this way or the previous way before going for training, because, you know, our bodies, our muscles getting to a muscle routine. So how long did it take, or is it still taking, for your body and muscles to get used to the new way?
Thankfully, now I know if I go for a high note or whatnot, I know flex the core before and get your breath in. So these days it's pretty, I've you know, created those new neural pathways. But yeah, it was difficult back in the day, because also when we started the band and started playing live, I was listening to a lot of Rolling Stones. So, you know, that's just a bunch of Mick Jagger just screams into the microphone. I don't know how his voice still made it. So it was definitely an adjustment, but thanks to many rehearsals, I was able to start slowly but surely getting the body and the throat and the diaphragm used to all of that before we got on stage. There's still some times where, you know, it had to happen, or not had to happen, where I let it happen. You know, the moment gets away from you, but more caution than not, at least. So, yeah, you always want to stay mindful, because, I mean, we're in it for the long run.
Well, and that's exactly it. Now, when it does happen, it's about just knowing, okay, it was awareness. And the more you are aware, the less will actually happen, because the memory of like knowing when it's going to happen and how to prevent it and move into the other pattern will kick in more regularly. I hope I'm making sense.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly.
How do you create a song?
Yo, there's so many different ways that songs have emerged. So back in the day, it would just be sitting in my room and playing maybe for an hour or two until something cool comes along. So you strum chords, you sing over it. I've got so many recordings on my phone of just messing around, and you know, it's just like 4 minutes of something horrible, and then there's like 30 seconds in there somewhere of like one good melody, and you're like, oh, let me remember that, you know. And then so I write melodies first and chords and the music around it, and then the words come, because the words come fairly easy once I know what I want to write about. So that's how it used to happen. But these days also sometimes, you know, I'd be driving and hum a tune, and then I realize, oh, that doesn't sound like something someone has stolen yet. I always say there's always melodies like floating around us, but people are constantly grabbing at them. Yes. So make sure to grab yours, you know, and once you do, put it out there. So that's also how it works. And then these days, my girlfriend also forces me to grab the guitar, and she's like, play something, you know, play for however long. And then eventually we stumble across something. So yeah, but also sometimes it's just utter nonsense. There's a 50-50. There's a pile of good stuff and there's a pile of not so good stuff.
Okay, but that's your perception of it not being good. So how do you know it is not good?
These days, we have been quite corrupted with art. I think people running, jumping with a crayon against the wall and then people clapping hands and it's selling for $1 million. People think that's, yeah, and there's a big subjective take on that. But the majority of us can agree on what's good or not. You know, you hear a song, you taste something, you hear something, you see something, and most of us will appreciate a good thing. Obviously, subjectivity is a matter, but I feel like if it's really good, then the majority will agree. And not that I play all these bad ideas to people and they tell me that's a bad idea, but I feel like I've gotten, at least for what I want to put out in terms of sound and message in the songs, if it's not corresponding with that, then so maybe it's not even bad. Maybe it's just not what I want to put out as Keenan, you know? Yeah. Maybe that's a better way of putting it.
I'm not sure if you are aware of NLP. So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. And okay, every person hears, sees, experiences, and feels information differently. The problem is that everyone is assuming that everyone is experiencing all that the same as them. And that's what's causing most of the breakdowns of communication.
So like I see the same red that you see, but you might be seeing purple.
No, my definition of the color red is different to your definition. So red, you and I experience it as danger or whatever. I experience it as energy and vibrancy. But because we're not discovering where the definitions of the words are, I'm assuming that you're also seeing it as energy and vibrancy. It causes breakdowns.
Okay. Yeah. It reminds me of a situation where you're driving with someone and they are driving, but you have to direct them, but you forget to direct them because you assume that they know because you've driven that road so many times, you know, and then you're like, oh, yeah, sorry, you got to go right here. Exactly. I assumed you knew. Something like that, a bit of sort of visual representation.
Exactly. So in NLP, the word assume, they say, is making an ass out of you and me. If you break it down, A is S plus U equals me. So part of NLP, there are three processing skills. Something kicks into each of us at a very young age, which allows us to sort of create a dominance in one, secondary in another, tertiary in the third. So dominance means that you'll be in it most of the day. Secondary, maybe a couple of hours. Tertiary, maybe half an hour.
Is this when you say the dominant, the secondary, and the tertiary, is that a state of being or what?
It's the way people process information.
Oh, okay.
So there you have visual people. Now, visual people create pictures of what they're hearing. So it's all about the images and the pictures. Auditory people, it's about the words, the sentences. So they'll hear a word, they understand the word, they put the word into the sentence, they understand the sentence, and so forth. Okay. Kinesthetic people, again, that word kinesthetic, they process information on the body language, the tone of voice, the energy, the emotion, all those type of feeling sort of elements. Discussing and focusing mainly only on music now, because it'll be different in different areas of your life. When you hear a finished song of your own or of someone else's, are you seeing pictures? Are you hearing the words? Or is it about the feeling?
I think I see a story in my head because I've always loved film. So there's always like a story. It might not be a fleshed out story. It might just be little moments, scenes. That plus what I hear creates the feeling. So I feel like all three is at play, but the two of them together create the feeling. So there is a little bit of a visual, maybe just a theme, you know, like sometimes you just see a scene in your head because of what I'm hearing, and that then causes the feeling. And if those two together creates the feeling that I'm trying to invoke, I know I'm on the right track.
Now, when you're listening to music by other artists, are you able to relax and just listen to it for what it is? Or is your creative brain unpacking the technical side of the music?
Yes, I feel like there's always in the background, I'm always processing, you know, what, oh, that was a cool synth. Oh, that's a cool drum tone. Oh, you know, that's a nice guitar pedal that they use there. But I can still separate from that and still, you know, just enjoy it. I feel like it's enhanced the enjoyment because, you know, then you know when maybe there's a solo coming up and you can like air guitar it. It's just fun. But also you got to put the ego aside because at the start, envy really kicks in. You know, you hear a great song or a new song that comes out and then you're just like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Another melody that's been taken from the air that you can't have anymore, if that makes sense, you know. Yeah. So you got to separate those two. You know, and people can get really passionate, you know. So if you don't have a good control or a good leash on your passion, it can make you a little, you know, it can feed the ego more than it should.
This is interesting. It was actually Dom, the guys from Goldfish, who made me realize that guys or people in the entertainment world creating music can sometimes only focus on the technical side. And it actually, for them, sometimes ruins the enjoyment of it because they're unpacking all the technical abilities or technical aspects of what is created.
That can happen with a song that I subjectively would categorize as bad or cheap or cheesy. So like a lot of modern pop, you know, like the stuff that you hear on radio that everyone's like, how is this on radio? So that, because then you're listening to it and you're like, I can hear these cheap tricks that they're using, you know, and you can't enjoy it. But like I said, if you're still unpacking that in the back of your mind, but it's a good song, then you can enjoy it. So I wouldn't say that it's ruined the music that I do enjoy, even though I am trying to unravel it. I would say I'm learning from it and still just enjoying it.
What is coming up next over the next period of time?
Okay, so we are constantly busy with songs. We've got a couple. We always try and keep some in the pipeline. So if one's released, then there's two or three waiting, you know. So there's always tunes waiting. We recently got into talks with a potential director. I'm not going to, I can't disclose any information yet because nothing has been sorted out yet. But we got into contact with someone. So there's potentially, you know, maybe another music video. We are also working on a vinyl, which will also be out sometime. We're just working on trying to figure out a good list of songs to put on that vinyl. Call it like a greatest hits, but without calling it a greatest hits, because that sounds very, you know, vain. The artist himself or herself should not create a greatest hits. I feel like that's something that people put out, you know, they make a playlist of all your greatest hits. And then furthermore, we are just playing as much as we can. And always thinking about how we can improve, you know, that extra 1%.
It's interesting you mentioned that about the greatest hits, but to a certain degree, I disagree with you because it is the audience that have bought those songs and made them popular to allow the artist to think, okay, well, these are, in inverted commas, the greatest hits because of the audience's response to that.
Yes, okay, yeah.
That's my perception of it, but it's for discussion and debate.
No, you're absolutely right, because that's how we are going to put this vinyl together. We are going to analyze what, you know, has the most streams, and then also, you know, a bit of it is what we love. Then put it out. We're just not going to call it the greatest hits album. We're just going to call it something cool, you know, but essentially that's all it is.
You've referenced this, so I'd like a little deeper dive. In South Africa, we don't have much access, as we know, because of accessibility and stores closing down and so forth. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I get it from Amazon UK. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work. I love the journey of the choice, the booklet, the unpacking, listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you are aware, overseas, UK, USA, Europe, massive uptick of physical. 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a high number of exchanges every day for a product to be put in this basket and then monitor it for tax purposes. Because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now being put back in that basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, the younger kids diving into this world. Then we have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What is your observation of the landscape at the moment?
Well, that's very interesting that you mentioned that, because and it makes sense that it's the young people, because the old people, they already have the collection, you know, and they've got what they wanted, and people aren't putting out that many CDs anymore, so it's not like they can add to their collection. But it is very, very interesting that you mentioned that, because I was aware that vinyls are doing good. You know, vinyls have been doing, I feel like that's always been a consistent, not consistent, as you say, you know, it has risen a bit. But to me, that's always been a collector's item. It's like, okay, this band has vinyl. That's great. We're going to get that. That's one solid piece of merch that you can always put out that you know eventually, if you get a big enough following, people will want, because vinyl is cool. You can either hang it on your wall. You know, a lot of people are into record players. A lot of people, I feel like we go back in time, you know, as we go into the future, we go back in time. I knew that tapes are coming back, you know, cassettes, they're also coming back. But I just didn't know that we are so far in time that CDs are already coming back. You know, it's like saying that the PlayStation 5 is trendy again, you know, it just came up. So that's very cool. It's very cool. And I'm glad about it, because it is one of the most cost-effective ways that artists can make some merch, even compared to t-shirts and hoodies and that kind of stuff. You know, it can be cheaper than that to make. So it's very cool to hear. And I think it should give some hope to smaller artists, you know, print a CD, people might listen to it. It's not as widespread here in South Africa yet. A lot of people that do buy our CDs just say, you know, they're going to keep it as a collector's item. Car radios aren't coming with built-in CD players anymore. Laptops don't come with DVD ROMs anymore. So it's difficult to obviously play it. But, you know, as you say, if this basket, if this influence from UK and US, where most of us get our influences from, bleed into South Africa, then we'll be seeing a surge in that as well, hopefully. And then that'll be good news for us again, because then, you know, most of the money back in the day came from hardcore merch and live performances.
Totally agree with you. So let's put it out there, and that a store opens again soon. For us to get.
Like a musica.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
I enjoy the fact that we get to bring the song to life, you know, whatever, or the set list, we get to bring that to life. I know what it sounds like on the recording. I know what it was like when we recorded it in studio, but now we get to do it on stage and I get to see people's reactions to it. Another great thing, if you're lucky enough, or well, we've been very lucky in the past, sometimes you get a little bit of a quiet show, but when you get a big show with a big crowd, it just feeds you know, you feed each other. The band entertains the crowd reacts, that reaction feeds you again, and it's just it's a loop. So that's amazing. And these days we've also moved over to a three piece, so our guitarist moved over to drums, and it's nice and compact that way, and it also forced me to become better at guitar. So these days I really enjoy playing guitar on stage. I still like dancing around a lot, so if we have big stages, I love running around, moving. I got my influence a lot, or at least the itch to want to move around from the people like Freddie Mercury and Rolling Stones. So yeah, energy has always been a part of it, and that's something I always enjoy. So if the crowd's feeling it, then even better. But even if they're not, I'm probably still going to make a fool of myself and have a good time on stage.
I'm that dude that is right in front. I'm standing, I'm taking a couple of photos, couple of videos, and put my phone away. I notice these days a lot of people are filming and videoing a lot. You referenced the interaction and the feeling and the visual of seeing people's reactions. Do you also, though, feel that seeing a bunch of phones in front of their faces takes away from that moment or energy or reaction, or it's just where society is?
Yes, I think it's just where society is, because I've seen people with their phones out, but then the other arm is still like, you know, they're going for it. So we've evolved, you know, these humanoids. So we found a way to now hold the phone and the flash focus on the perfect angle, but at the same time, we're at the back here singing along. So, yeah, I quite like it, because then it's free marketing for the artist, you know, that they post their stories. And it's just cool to see, you know, it's the closest thing to a stadium show when you see all those little lights flicker, you know. And maybe it's just because that's the time that I'm growing up in, that I started making music in, is the phone flash on kind of thing, instead of just seeing people's faces. I mean, back in the day in the 80s and the 90s, it was really difficult to have to record a show. You know, you'd have to get a handheld or something like that.
They weren't allowed to be taken.
Really?
Yeah. Because you weren't allowed to take cameras. And you,
that's the way for DVDs.
Exactly. If they found a camera or video camera, they would actually confiscate it and take it away from you.
Damn. Okay. Yeah, see, I didn't know that. So,
yeah.
Oh, God, it's nice because, you know, there's always photographers and management and whatnot tries to, the team tries to get some footage in. But it's always so nice to see how many people enjoyed it, because you can tell by the fact that they reposted it. There's been a lot of times where we've had a show, you know, all around the Korea so far, where I've seen a lot of flashes that night, but then the next day I don't see any posts about it. Sure, maybe they're keeping it for their own sentimental reasons, but the fact that someone then goes, oh yeah, I went to this show last night, let me post it. That's quite a nice feeling to see that they enjoyed it that much, that they're showing, you know, their followers, exposing us to a new crowd and tagging us and we tag them. And it's just a nice little community building thing as well. So I don't mind it.
Okay, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question today, tomorrow, or the next day, again, I know your answer will be different every time. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, without any reasoning, like I'd play this one, and this one, who would you play and what songs would you play?
One would be This Must Be the Place from Talking Heads. Second will be this new song that I found recently called Velvet Ring by Big Thief. I think it's quite indie. I'm not really, I don't like those people who, okay, no hate to them, but people who name all these very strange, very niche, and then they're shocked that you haven't heard of them because, oh yeah, so I'm not going to be all pretentious about it, but that is one of them that I found that I don't think are that big. I really like, this is a difficult one. I'm going to have to go Fleetwood Mac, Little Lies. I've got 2 left. You've got me in a pickle here. Okay. Let's go genre-based. Ooh, there's a really cool song by Dean Martin called Confused. I like that one a lot. And then one more song. Come on. One more song that I play a lot. Ooh, here we go. Show Me How, or Show You How. I can show you how. Can't remember who does it. So, or Hole of the Moon.
Oh, Hole of the Moon by the Waterboys.
Yes. Either that one, Hole of the Moon, and Echo and the Bunnymen's Killing Moon. Those two are on the same level for me. I love those. It's strange how we feel so, sometimes we feel identified by the songs that we listen to, or the songs that we know people know we listen to, you know. So that's
interesting. That's very interesting.
You know, people connotate a lot of personality to their playlist and their music. Like, you see a lot of people, they tie their identity to their playlists and stuff. So I think there's a big, big emotional connection there with music and creating some kind of whole identity around that.
Which for me is weird, because it should be a extension of who you are, not an identification of who you are.
Yeah. I think it's more for teens, you know, you get into like Nirvana and then suddenly all you do is you wear jeans and sneakers and then you have to wear t-shirts. Or you get into, I don't know, people get into metal and then all they wear is black.
And
you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But eventually you grow out of it and you find yourself again. You have to, otherwise.
Find that it's an extension and not an identification.
Exactly.
So, Keenan, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
I would like to say thank you very much for giving me the opportunity and the platform to chat about very cool things that I haven't chatted about before in any other chats. So thank you for that. I'm looking forward to many more years if, you know, this will be done. Then I'm excited for what's to come. And I hope that there are some people who maybe did not know of me beforehand that now watch your podcast and they see this and that they can give us a follow and give us a listen. And maybe we can change some lives in form of music.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.